And welcome. We're back with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, do you think that if the president gets convicted under the impeachment proceedings, that he then legally cannot run again in 2024?
I'm not sure, George. I haven't researched it, and I'm not an attorney, so I don't know. But I think it's a possibility. If they can't make it, if they can't close the door legally, then I think they're going to try and close the door in the court of popular opinion. I don't think it's going to work in the court of popular opinion, but they're going to try.
I think so, too. And I assume he is not going to be at the inauguration. I can't remember if past presidents have been there or not. What do you think?
So as far as I know, he would be the first to not be there.
Aha.
I think, you know, if here's the thing. If you look at the extraordinary damage that was done to win this election, you know, we've had since 2016, we reverted immediately from the war on terrorism to the war on populism. So, it's far bigger than Donald Trump. But if you look at the dirty tricks and how many millions of people have had their livelihoods and their businesses destroyed to engineer this win, I think it's left the impression that essentially the people who engineered the financial coup d'etat in Washington have no empathy for the average person and are perfectly happy to kill, steal, and cheat to win. So it's gotten very brass tacks.
Do you think Hillary thought she was a shoo-in?
You know, I had no idea. She must have. But you know something? That was one of the most astonishing. As somebody who spent a lot of time in Washington and watched a lot of campaigns, I had never seen a campaign as poorly run as that. And it's astonishing because Bill Clinton is a very astute and capable politician.
Yeah. I don't think he got involved in it. For some reason, I think he washed his hands of this one.
I just think Hillary Clinton has, you know, she's an attorney and she's a fixer. She's not a politician. You know, if you look at Obama, if you look at Bill Clinton, they have serious political skills. You can agree with them and disagree with them. You can like them or not, but they've got very significant political skills. You know, but it's funny that, you know, sort of the dirty fixers like a George H.W. Bush and or a Hillary Clinton, you know, they have zero political skills. And the issue always is for their campaign managers is how are you going to get the American people to go along with somebody they don't want? And, of course, that's why we have election fraud.
When I saw Barack Obama give the Democratic speech prior to being president, 4 years before that, I said, this guy's going to be a candidate. I mean, he was as eloquent a speaker as anybody I've ever heard, Catherine.
Well, I would say he was, you know, we used to call guys like Obama slither because they could just slither and slide around and everybody would be charmed and pleased. And, you know, you always had to be careful where they're going to go. But, you know, there's no doubt about it that he was a smooth operator and truly... our first, I call them Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to have a wonderful anthropologist, Jennifer James, who would say that the old leadership model was the Lone Ranger and the new leadership model was the Ninja Turtle. And Trump is very much the Lone Ranger model and Obama is very much the Ninja Turtle model. And you can see because they reflect a different culture, a different economy, a different time. But of course, Lone Ranger model is the model that's always traditionally worked for real estate. And Ninja Turtle is the model that works for IT.
Well, let's just pray for our nation, Catherine, because we're going to need it over the next 3 years. Let's take some calls.
I don't know if you covered the great the Christmas conjunction on the 22nd on the solstice in December.
Yeah, we did.
I really felt it was a moment of letting go with the past and moving forward. And what I see is incredible talent being let go and unleashed from, you know, from the past. There's a letting go of the past and people saying, okay, let's move forward. So behind all of this is, you know, there's a lot of positive elements of excellent people coming out of the old system and saying, okay, it is what it is. Let's create something better.
For the rest of the hour, we're going to take your phone calls with Catherine Austin Fitz. Let us begin by going to Christian in San Pedro, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Christian. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. I want to say I've been listening to your show since 2004 and still chugging along. Just keep it up with those guests. I do have one request, and that is just to plant this in your head as a seed. I miss Catherine is a great she knows a lot about, the economy and political geopolitical subjects. But try to see if you can bring Craig Hewlett back on. I mean, it's been
I just talked to Lisa about that last week, as a matter of fact. So yeah. That's in the works.
Yeah. The question I have for Austin Fitz is good evening. I'll make it brief. Even though I did not vote for Trump in 2016, it was the first time in my life I was not able to vote for either or because I just did not like either candidate. But the point is, Trump became president, and over the as the months and years went by, I have become very suspicious, and this is my theory. I've always had this feeling, this suspicion. I'm probably not the only one who felt this, that since Trump was not part of, in quote, the establishment, global elite, part of, the Federal Reserve, the Council on Foreign Relations, he kind of did his own thing. He kind of threw over the globalist bandwagon. Remember when Barack Obama, when he was about to leave, he was hammering together the final parts of another of these disastrous free trade agreements, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Right? So I'm curious, do you think that the global elite and the establishment set about from the very beginning of sabotaging Donald Trump's presidency, doing everything in their power to make sure that he wouldn't be successful because he is not part of the establishment. He was a threat to, and I'll just go ahead and I'll spit it out, the New World Order, and I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you.
Okay, my friend. Well, he's got a lot of points that one of the reasons President Donald Trump got elected was that he was a non-politician. He was unconventional. And people wanted a change. And compared to Hillary Clinton, people said, we want this guy. He was his own worst enemy with his tweets and things like that. But go ahead, Catherine. I'll let you jump in.
So I think I don't think anybody can arrive in the presidency without significant support from some portion of the establishment. And I think Trump had a lot of support from parts of the establishment. There was a real disagreement, George, as to whether we should continue to asset strip North America to build out a global empire versus did we need to reshore a lot of activities and rebuild more to make sure our base was strong. So there was a significant disagreement in different factions. And, and I think it reflected 4 years of bringing back a lot of resources and reshoring to America, trying to build up North America. And now, that period is over, and they're ready to go back to building forward.
Do you think the president defeated himself in this election?
So I think we're really way too much focused on personality. I believe that the Republicans won the election and then lost it through very targeted fraud. When Bill Barr said there was no widespread fraud that swung the election, he was right. It was very targeted fraud. It was one county, one big county in the big six swing states. So I think the election fraud was significant. I keep telling the story. My first boyfriend when I was a teenager was the son of a ward leader in Philadelphia. And he used to go out during every election with a huge roll of cash and buy all the votes.
Oh, that's what they did during the Kennedy administration.
I know. Election fraud is a very long-standing American tradition. So what I always say is neither Biden or Trump would have been the candidates without election fraud. So that's the sort of irony here. So I think we're very focused on Trump as a personality, and that's a distraction from the real issues. And I don't think that's an accident. I think a lot of what the corporate media has been trying to do is to distract us from the real issues. So, for example, $21 trillion is missing. That's $65,000 per person. And I think a lot of the moves you're seeing is to consolidate what I call the financial coup and make sure that money, you know, that as Americans discover that their money's been stolen, and that translates into no money for nursing homes and no money for retirements, et cetera, you know, they're going to start asking, where is the money? And the leadership wants to make sure they don't have the power to come do anything about it.
Didn't a lot of this, too, disappear during the Reagan administration with a fellow by the name of Leo Wanta?
No. You know, I just don't buy the Wanta story.
You've heard that story.
The Wanta story contradicts every experience I've ever had in the financial system. It makes no sense. So I don't buy it. But I will say this. The Iran-Contra financial fraud was very significant. And I will tell you an interesting story, George. You know, I kept trying to figure out, I've gone back and spent a lot of time trying to unpack all the mortgage fraud, because a lot of the financial fraud centers around mortgages.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys inspired me to really look into space and understand space, and I got to credit you with it again and again. But there was one moment in time when the financial fraud just exploded. It just exploded, and I was like, what was that? And finally, I read The Rings of Saturn, and I realized, oh, it started when the Voyager went by Saturn and saw the thing in the ring.
Perfect.
And I can just see those pictures coming back from the Voyager. And remember, George H.W. Bush is then, you know, comes in as the VP, but controlling intelligence and enforcement.
That's right.
And I can just see George H.W. Bush saying, get me trillions of dollars. I don't care how you do it. It doesn't matter. We got to have the money because we got to deal with it.
Let's go.
That's
next.
My guess.
I like it. JJ's in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, JJ. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Really enjoy the program.
Hi. Thank you.
I had a question for Catherine regarding the payroll protection program. You know, I'm an owner of a small business, and, you know, like most small businesses, we were impacted, you know, back in the spring and summer when COVID hit, and I took advantage of the first round of payroll protection. But now my bank calls me and says there's a second round.
That's
and
right.
I even told them, you know, we've recovered. I don't necessarily need the money. And they said, oh, that's okay. We encourage you to go ahead and take a second draw. It's going to all be forgiven. And I can't help but just get a churning in my gut about, where are we getting this money, and is there any nefarious ties or unseen strings attached to this? And I'm curious to know Catherine's opinion on that.
Okay, well done. And you're absolutely right. There's a second round of payroll protection money coming to small businesses. And if you're entitled, apply. But go ahead, Catherine.
So my theory is all government money comes with a sock in the jaw. And generally, I have not looked at the laws related to the payroll protection program, but I've never seen government subsidy of this kind, whether loans or, you know, or a grant, that didn't come with a list of audible compliance requirements that are more expensive if you really complied than the money they're giving you. And ultimately, it gives them the ability to come after you on everything and anything.
What was the guy who got a disaster assistance loan in the millions? He went and bought a Maserati, and they caught him in Vegas. His employees turned him in.
My favorite one, George, when I was Assistant Secretary of Housing, we had these home improvement loans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could, these contractors would go around and do small amounts of home improvement, $2,000 to $4,000, $2,000 to $10,000. You know, with these packages. And one guy got caught. He had financed his divorce with his home improvement loan. And he defended himself by saying that it did improve his home.
All he had to do was take a salary and pay for it out of that. Jeez.
You know, go figure, George. Go figure.
Crazy times. Tom in La Jolla, California. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. Catherine, I'm glad you recommended the movie Enemy of the State. Everybody should watch that. You are the Gene Hackman of financial research. Thank you for what you do. A comment and then a question. Conservative financial researcher Anthony Sutton, S-U-T-T-O-N. He used to work for the Hoover Institute for Stanford University. And 45 years ago, he wrote a monograph called Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. 220 pages, all National Archive State Department documents that proved, not allegation, not speculation, not conspiracy theory, but State Department documents that proved that Wall Street financiers financed the Bolshevik Revolution and Vladimir Lenin. And he also, his second book was Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And again, he did the same thing. He went to the National Archives. He procured State Department documents showing that Wall Street financed the rise of National Socialism and Adolf Hitler. His third book was Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development. And in that work, again, he took State Department documents and proved that the first 50 years of Soviet Russia, virtually every factory was financed by Wall Street, central banking, and corporate cartels from the West. And which gets me to my question. It seems that there is an advantage for central banking and Wall Street and big corporate cartels to finance the establishment of dictatorships like Vladimir Lenin and the Bolshevik Revolution, like Adolf Hitler, like Mussolini of Italy, and on. You could bring it up to the present, you know, with Saddam Hussein, as you've mentioned, and Gaddafi, et cetera. And I was wondering if you would speak about that it seems that Wall Street has a vested interest in establishing a dictatorship as opposed to a democracy because they're easier to control, you know, for financial gain. And again, I think you're the Gene Hackman of, like an enemy of the state. Thank you for what you do.
Interesting comments there, Catherine.
Yeah, so Sutton was an absolutely outstanding researcher, and his works are terrific. Sometimes they can be hard or expensive to find, but if you're interested in how we got to this point, Sutton is one of the best. And one of his proteges, Patrick Wood, is writing about technocracy and connecting the dots, you know, because he worked with Sutton. You know, so if you really want to get a bring down on Sutton's work and bring it into present time, you should check out Patrick Wood's work. And I think I'm pretty sure you've had him on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
But they don't call it the central banking warfare model for nothing. You know, war is a huge business, and it has been for centuries. And as we've engaged in the central banking warfare model, we just keep centralizing. And the more you develop technology, the more you can centralize. And we're watching a push to centralize, which is so, I would say, out of harmony with how life and the economy and the planet work. You know, I continue to believe it's going to fail.
And the big banks, Catherine, they backed Hitler. There's no question about that, and it was big business. We'll come back and have you finish up your statement and then take final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour on Coast to Coast, Tim Schwartz joins us as we talk about alien encounters and time travel, so make sure you're part of Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, Catherine Austin Fitz with us. We'll get to your final calls as well. Catherine, thank you again, by the way, for spending some time with us. We've got just a half hour to go here, but I really appreciate you and what you've done for us over the years.
George, what an education it is being part of this amazing network of yours. As you know, the live shows are amazing because if you look at how smart your audience is, it never ends. It just astonishes me. I mean, you have more independent thinkers per person than just about any media in the country.
They truly do. They're the best. Let's go to Don in Kent, Ohio to get things started. Hey, Donald, welcome.
Hey, God bless your brother George and sister Karen. You know, I have two quick comments and one question.
Okay.
You mentioned Edward Snowden. He claimed that aliens were running the White House. No wonder the presidents go in with and then come out with gray hair. And you mentioned the Book of Revelation. You know, it's impossible to get the mark of the beast if you have the seal of God of Revelation 7:3. Now the question. There's two Vatican insiders, the Bishop of St. Louis, now a Cardinal Raymond Burke, along with the Archbishop in hiding, who wrote a letter to President Trump. But they both claim that the Vatican is pushing for this great reset and are complacent in the vaccine program. Catherine, what do you know about this great reset? It sounds like they're going to take all of our property and give us a credit, kind of like what they did with Social Security, robbing the system and giving us an IOU. What say you? God bless you.
Okay. Go ahead, Catherine.
There are two resets being discussed. The one that is the most important to keep your eye on is the going direct reset that was approved by the central bankers in August 2019. And you can see different efforts underway to design the central bank digital currencies. So that's the system you want to watch, along with things like the Chinese social credit system. Now, you've got the World Economic Forum leading a conversation that to me is more of a distraction, and they're contemplating all sorts of ideas, you know, many of which, you know, certainly I would say are incoherent, psychopathic, et cetera. But they're leading a conversation, and they call it, I think, the Great Reset. You know, and you have all sorts of people chiming in and getting attention for that. I would keep your eye on the going direct reset, because the question is, what are the train tracks that the central bankers are planning to lay out? And most importantly, how do we start taking back community currencies, time banking in communities, creating and building our own fresh food systems, and circulating equity in our communities? Because we've got to decentralize the money creation process.
All right, thanks. Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. Hello there, Cornelius. Hope you're well.
Yeah, George, I'm well, and Catherine, it's nice to hear you again. It's something about the chemistry between you and Catherine. I tell you, I love to hear y'all two talk together and stuff. The guy, Don, that just called, I'm like him. I'm the God, Guns, and Gold man, Catherine, and the Bible, Bullets, and Beans man. I think we're in the end times and everything. I was just telling Tommy that, to me, the Mark of the Beast will be a mandatory-type system where they'll say they'll put a chip in your hand or your head, and you say you can't buy or sell it unless you have the chip or the vaccine, or like George used to say, you wear the mask. You got to wear the mask everywhere, so the mask of the beast. But I'd come up with something too, and I know George, you're supporting Snowden and Assange, but let me tell you something. Now, they didn't betray anything from those eastern countries and stuff, and that's why they went to Red Russia, Snowden did, and all like that, and to China. And I don't know how they snuck into the system. You know, for a year now, last year, they snuck into the system while the Democrats were trying to impeach Trump. I'm a big Trump supporter and stuff, and I know he's not a globalist, and I think he did all right, but the globalists on both sides, the Republican and Democratic side, destroyed him along with the communist Chinese, and we got Beijing Biden. But my main question for you, I don't know if you remember this, but Donald Rumsfeld, right before September 11th, said billions of dollars was missing in the Defense Department. Then all of a sudden, boom, September the 11th happens. And it, like I believe George said, this is more or less a false flag operation that they're doing at the Capitol. I don't think anything's going to happen. Lafayette, Louisiana, they're having a big Trump rally Saturday and stuff. So Black Lives Matter has called the FBI and everybody saying that they're a bunch of racists and all like that. And I just know that they're not. I'm African-American, and like I said, a lot of African-Americans, a lot of Latinos supported Trump and stuff. But God bless you, and thank you so much.
Well, a lot of African-Americans and Latinos did support the president, Catherine.
I live in Tennessee, and I'm homesick, so it's such a great thing, Cornelius, to hear that southern warmth.
Let's go to Brandon in Pendleton, Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Brandon. Thanks for holding.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, so I've seen you over Everett, Washington. Nice to meet you, and a great show. But my question is, what does she foresee what's going on? Because since 1983, when I had a car accident, a near-death experience, I've already seen the future, and I've been pretty much accurate in everything, and from people's deaths to government corruptions, et cetera. So that's why I want to figure out, what does she see? Because I see one thing, and I said, if it doesn't work this way, this is going to happen this way. If it goes to Biden, it's not going to be good. And a lot of people are saying the same thing, too, without being, gifted.
What say you, Catherine?
So what's happening is that the leadership is trying to centralize control and do it in a way which is extremely destructive for the general population. So that's one way to go. Another way to go is we re-engineer out of the central banking warfare into a model which is in harmony with life. And decentralized to, that's what I would call a human civilization. So if we can decentralize the money creation and circulation process, but stay committed to a human civilization, we can come out fine. So we're really watching a battle, George, of what model we're going to, we're going to use. Are we going to use a human model or an inhuman model? Are we going to allow the centralization of and a monopoly of money that creates the market, the big system, or are we going to decentralize? And that's being battled out right now. And the reason it feels so strange some days is that's the friction of war. This is a new kind of World War III has started here.
Biden may surprise people and do a pretty good job. I just hope things don't unfold with his son Hunter and all that other mess that's going on.
So, George, I'm a skeptic, because if you look at the financial tsunami they're about to unleash, we're talking about pouring financial methadone over the planet in a way that's going to, it's going to double down on all the things that have messed us up for the last 20 years. So I'm not encouraged. But it's not Biden. It's not his personality. It's the plan that is being launched.
Let's go next to Carl in Boston. Hey, Carl, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a question. The stock market closed pretty good today. The NASDAQ was up, and the Dow Jones was only down 8 points at 3106. And I'm wondering, the stock market hasn't been this high since 1929. And do you see a crash coming? And I had one more question and a comment. The VAXX, is that not nanotechnology or what? And my comment is this all meant to promote socialism or a gateway to the New World Order? And I'll take my answers off the air.
I'll let you take that part first, Catherine. Go ahead.
So I was going to do the crash first. So if you look at traditionally the U.S. Equity markets have traded off of basically income and profit. And what we've been watching recently is an extraordinary divide between the profits and the prices. So the price-earnings ratios have been going up, up, up without profit support. And, of course, one of the things we're watching in terms of economic warfare is every effort to shift income from small business into publicly traded stocks as part of the economic warfare going on. As a result of that divergence, you see many market commentators calling and saying there's going to be a major correction, which is possible. At the same time, if you look at the plans to pump out extraordinary, as I said, financial methadone, if they achieve that plan, it will be very, very supportive of higher equity markets. Not necessarily in a good way. Don't be excited about that, because when you're this out of alignment with the fundamental, living people, animals, and plants, a higher stock market can be bad for the world. So You know, so is a major correction possible? Yes, but the financial method on, if it gets piled on, could send the market higher, but it could also send household expenses much higher and not send incomes higher at all. So it's going to be more squeeze on the middle class. The other question gets to the issue. We have a section in the State of Our Currencies called Creepy Technology, and at Solari we have a database called also Creepy Technology, and we're tracking a lot of the technologies that are being prototyped right now in terms of integration, injecting metal into human bodies and integrating digital technology into human bodies, and it's a pretty complex topic, and I'm way out of my comfort zone on it, but we try and cover it and sort of provide people who know a lot more. There's no doubt that the push towards transhumanism is to integrate all sorts of creepy technology into the human body. It's pretty gruesome. So I'm glad your listener pointed it out. It's something we all need to know about. It's hard for many people to fathom that this is underway, but there's no doubt that we're trying to make robots human and humans robots. That's the only way I can describe it.
And are we moving towards socialism?
You know, we should be so lucky that this is socialism. This is not socialism. This is something I would describe as slavery.
Yep, I would agree with that. Let's go next to Richard in North Carolina. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking the call. I'm Miss Fitz. I just wanted to let you know I was lucky enough to speak with you more than a year or so ago on the call here at Coast to Coast, and I wanted to make sure that you knew that you are very loved, admired, appreciated by many, and you keep up the good work. A lot of us speak of you and your works, and, well, we just wanted to let you know, please come back soon. We all love hearing you and your answers, and George, of course, is always the greatest question person in the world. The answers are out there. We just have to ask the right questions. So thank you. Please come back and be with us soon.
Well, that's very nice, Catherine.
George, I just have to tell a story. When we did the show in Vancouver, Canada, I flew back to the United States, and I get to the border, and the guy, it's a real tough guy at the border. He's looking at my passport, and he says, Fitz, why do I know this name? What were you doing in Canada? He's real tough. And I said, well, I was doing a show, blah, blah, blah. He said, what kind of show? I said, Coast to Coast AM. He said, that's how I know the name. You're a Coast to Coast regular, aren't you? I said, well, yes, I am. And he looked at me and he says, well, Miss Fitz, welcome to the United States. All Coast to Coast regulars are welcome in the United States.
I love it.
And that's... I sailed on through. It was so sweet.
It continues to grow, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Catherine, we only have a minute left. I'd like you to take advantage of mentioning your website and what people can do when they get to it.
Sure. So my website is solari.com. There's a tremendous amount available to the public. A lot of what we do is subscriber content, and you can be a digital subscriber or a digital in print. We publish 4 hard copies a year of our quarterly and annual wrap-up, and we invite you to come, you know, whether you want to come and just enjoy the public or become a subscriber, we would love to have you. Our vision statement is helping each other live a free and inspired life, and the reason we want to know the truth is it helps us navigate. So everyone's welcome, and come as you are.
Super. Catherine, thanks again. Keep in touch with us. Be safe wherever you may be. Up next, we're going to talk about some alien encounters and time travel on Coast to Coast. So don't touch your dial and don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or whatever you want to do. We'll be back.